Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, Champions League. The shocks, the surprises from a thrilling midweek round. Dida as reliable as John Barnes with a tax return, but Milan on fire at the Bernabeu. Barcelona with a shock defeat to the Russian champs. Was it my perfect Kazan? Meantime, Liverpool, once again controversy over a red balloon-like object. Is Rafa on the way out? And with Lyon, Marseille and Bordeaux make it 3 wins out of 3, is it time to take the French side seriously? There's Post, a roundup of all the other news, including Gareth Southgate's sad exit at Middlesbrough, and a look forward to the weekend action, Sunday's big matchup at Anfield, and that whole Portsmouth six-pointer in today's Football Weekly Extra. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us. Here in the pod, we have Paul Doyle. Hi, Paul.
Hi, James.
Hi.
Yeah.
Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. Hey. And perspicacious and perspex tank enclosed pulsing brain of football knowledge. And the man who wrote the book on tactics, quite literally, Jonathan Wilson.
Hi, James.
Hi. Tell you what, there's been a lot of people posting and commenting on how all those people, those naysayers saying that the Champions League group stages were a bit dull and should be got rid of, have been served by this week's results. Barry?
Well, we haven't been served. And I think the fact that a couple of shock results is capable of causing such a kerfuffle just goes to prove that we were right. And that's all it takes to get people excited.
It's a trend. Like last year you had Famagusta and teams like that. Right. It's a trend. It's becoming a trend.
If I was one for using old jokes, I would say that this week we haven't had just one or two shot results. We've had more turn-ups than Roddy Corbett's wardrobe.
But it's a good thing you're not one for using old jokes. There's always going to be the occasional upset, but we're still going to be left with a load of dead rubbers at the end of the group
maybe
stages.
Maybe not. Take a look at Inter's group with Barcelona there. There's four teams, 1 point between them. That could well go down to the last round. Sorry, Johnson.
But still, I mean, these shocks seem to have generated a new kind of surge of interest. Mm. But how much more interesting would it have been if these had been the first legs of a two-legged knockout tie?
Yes, I take your point.
But I mean, I think to talk about the Champions League group stage in terms of interest, it's not really about interest. It's about generating revenue, and it's a kind of halfway house between a cup competition, which most people seem to prefer, and a Super League, which the clubs and the money men might prefer.
But you enjoyed this week's Champions League, the fact is, with the group stage format, you get more of this kind of thing than you would do with the straight knockout tournament.
That is true, but you also get more of the meaningless games.
That is also true.
I mean,
but you don't have to watch them all, of course.
Several weeks ago, on the sort of comments section underneath the Football Weekly blog, I devised 64 team straight knockout tournament for UEFA that would have, you know, had the same amount of TV nights and, you know, wouldn't have detracted from the competition in any way.
Right.
And
it just
for reasons
with them or in any.
No. You are, of course, referring to what happened to me last night, which was I went home after doing the minute by minute on the very, very dull CSKA Manchester United game, and I bought a Chinese, a couple of cans of beer, and was getting ready to watch the second half of Real Madrid Milan, and I walked into my living room to see Mrs. Baz watching Emma, which she'd got a few of them backed up on Sky Plus.
Isn't this the third adaptation of Emma in the last decade? Because there's a Kate Beckinsale one, there's a Gwyneth Paltrow one, now there's this one. Do we need this?
No, we don't need any. I have no idea
it's
how many adaptations.
Didn't Alicia Silverstone do one that was one based in California?
Yeah, that was quite good though, wasn't it?
I didn't see it myself.
What was it called? I remember that.
Clueless. Wasn't
Clueless,
it?
Yeah.
There you go. Right.
But anyway, I was asked, you know, do you want to watch something else?
Right.
And I sort of, no.
Right.
I do tend to monopolise the TV
right.
and watch.
So you lost out in that domestic clash, and that rather neatly brings us on to Real Madrid Milan, which, if you'll consent, I think is what we should lead on. The Derby of Europe, as it was hailed in both Italy and Spain. Not sure what the rest of the continent thought about that, but what a huge game it was. A 3-2 win for Milan. Milan had never, ever managed to beat Real Madrid in Madrid, not even when they were good, and they're certainly not good this year. Their last Champions League result was a 1-0 defeat at home to Zurich. And yet, they went to the most expensively assembled team in the history of expensively assembled teams and came away with a 3-2 win that was, dare I say, even comfortable perhaps at the end. Let's hear what they're making of it all in España with Dr. Sid.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well, Sid. It's us here at Football Weekly Extra. And you know what? You've been bumped to the top of the queue today. So big.
Woof. Woof, I rock.
Hang on a minute. I've got here, Real Madrid were rubbish.
Hang on a minute. They were rubbish.
They were.
Woof, woof. Yes. And so on. Yes. Crikey.
Indeed.
It looks like we're going to have to go to Sid's dog for a coherent and cogent comment on last night's game.
Well, I can understand.
That could probably be arranged, to be honest, yeah.
Now, it was an extraordinary match and a big surprise, I think, for a few, but the most prescient of observers, Milan's 3-2 win at Real Madrid. And what are they making of it all in Spain?
Well, can I take you up on that? It was a fantastic match. I thought it was an absolutely appallingly bad match for 70 minutes, maybe even 75. But the last 15 minutes, so much happened that it kind of finally lived up to that billing of being kind of, you know, derby of Europe and two big clubs with 16 European Cups between them. I thought most of the game was dreadful. And then when Pirlo scored that unbelievably good goal from all of 670 yards, the game completely changed. And then it really did get very, very exciting indeed. What they're saying now, as you can probably imagine, in Spain is a whole range of things. I mean, obviously, there's a difference between the Madrid press and the Catalan press, but probably what's interesting is this: is even the Madrid press is concerned about this. They're pointing out, and I think with some justification, that Madrid have, according to them, only played two genuinely good sides this year, Sevilla and AC Milan, and lost them both. That on both occasions, Cristiano Ronaldo was missing, and that's not coincidence. And that Manuel Pellegrini still doesn't know what he's doing.
Right. I mean, Ronaldo out is a huge, huge blow, of course, to Real Madrid. But they did still have two other very expensive signings, Benzema and Kaká, neither of whom shone.
No, Benzema in particular was very, very poor. And I think this is part of another debate that's starting to build. Benzema has shown on occasions that he's not very happy with the way things are going. He's not very happy with the fact that he gets substituted quite a lot. And I think he's shown a little bit of tetchiness about this. He doesn't particularly like the formation. He thinks that he should play alongside a number nine rather than alongside someone like Raul, who, just as he does, wants to drop in and pick the ball up and drop to the wings and get the ball and be involved in play. And he had a really good opportunity to make a point last night and just didn't do it. Now, obviously, it's very, very early to be kind of, you know, dismissing players and saying they're not good enough. But certainly so far, there's quite a lot of concern about how badly Benzema's playing.
Right, OK. Unlike, say, Dida in the Milan goal, because...
Brilliant, wasn't it?
Brilliant, yeah. When you say that the first 75 minutes were rubbish, I don't know, because that was pretty special.
Well, that's the thing. The whole game, I thought, until about 70, 75 minutes, the whole game was going to be defined by that one absolutely fantastic comic error. And it seemed to me that what he was actually trying to do was bounce the ball on the floor, so that it would hit the floor and come up back in his hands, and he'd launch a counter-attack. And he forgot to stop walking at that stage and walked straight into his... What an absolute wally.
Hmm. Casillas wasn't looking too much cleverer, though, was he?
No. Casillas made a terrible mistake on the second Milan goal. It's interesting. I thought maybe, I mean, I don't know this for sure, obviously, but maybe it felt like what happened with Casillas was that he came steaming out of his area towards the ball, realised he was out of his area, and became so concerned with not handling it and how else am I going to reach it if I'm going to use my hands, that he kind of completely forgot about the fundamental thing, which was reaching it at all.
Hmm.
Now, allowed it to kind of skip past him.
Indeed. And then on the final Milan goal, it was bizarre how you had a queue of about five Madrid players just standing there watching, ignoring Pato, who was kind of sitting happily unmarked on the edge of the box, and watching instead Seedorf, waiting for him to see which way he was going to kick it. Nobody went to tackle it. No one went to close him down. And that seemed to be a little bit the key about this game, because Milan are a quality side, but only if you give them time to play, because they're not the fastest.
Yeah, Madrid do lack that little bit of intensity on occasion. I mean, they had intensity going forward, I thought, in the last 15 minutes or so. It was almost as if Royston Drenthe's goal, maybe to some extent, but more to the point, the second Milan goal kind of created this bugle call, and Madrid started steaming forward. And yet, despite they having the intensity going forward, they were very, very poor at the back, which isn't always true of Madrid. I think it's quite an easy cliche to say, oh, Madrid are rubbish at the back because they've bought all these players going forward. They're actually not that bad at the back. I think where they've been rubbish this year has been in the midfield for the most part. But last night, they were desperately passive. And in particular... I'm reluctant to slay him off too much because I think he could be a very good footballer at some stage, and he is a fantastic athlete. But the bottom line is that for the last 2 years, and I'm going to use a favourite word again now, Jimbo, for the last 2 years, Sergio Ramos has been rubbish.
All right.
Well, I noticed listening to the analysis after the game when Emma had ended last night that Jamie Redknapp, the ace Sky pundit, conveyed the impression that he'd never actually seen or heard of Pato before. And it kind of reminded me of the time Richard Keys likened Andrea Pirlo to, you know, said he might be the new Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah, said he when he took a couple of free kicks, he said, oh, he's been watching Ronaldo. Yeah. Quality stuff. I also noticed that the entire panel there of Sky experts had a 5-minute discussion on who might be the best goalkeeper in Europe. And they couldn't get past a couple of Premier keepers. Eventually, 5 minutes in, Jamie Redknapp, remember there was a bloke at Inter, two minutes later came up with his name. And Gigi Buffon did not feature once. And if they'd watched Juve's first win in about 3 months last night against Maccabi Haifa, in which Buffon once again was man of the match, they might have remembered the name of said outstanding Italian keeper.
There's also a very strange bit in that analysis where Ruud Gullit's talking over some a clip of something, started talking about something completely different. Giggled and then it cut off halfway through.
Yeah. Now, what was that about?
I have no
idea.
What
are you suggesting?
I don't know. He just burst out laughing in the middle of an analysis.
Yeah. And then the other two took over.
He's
fairly professionally, to be fair.
Yeah.
And then it cuts back to the studio and Hullet's sitting there demurely and gets on with it.
Right.
So, wow. Who knows what was going on?
Well, if you have any idea, maybe there's a Sky Insider out there in listener land. You know, do drop us a line. Because I was very curious about that too, Jonathan. Sid, sorry. Now,
Timbo, was that you trying to get a contact at Sky again?
Curses. Well, there you go. The impact at Madrid then, is this crisis already, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, I don't think it's entirely crisis, but I do think that the problem about Madrid with the pressure is that they're always only a couple of bad results away from a crisis. So let's just say this is maybe a couple of stepping stones towards one, and a couple more bad results, particularly against a half-decent side, particularly if they continue to play poorly. And I wouldn't so much say crisis, but we could see Manuel Pellegrini under a bit of pressure.
Now, you know what, Sid? While you're on the line, this was the first time in history, et cetera, that Real Madrid and Barcelona have both lost at home in the same round of the Champions League.
That's pretty exciting, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah. And what's the feeling in the Catalan press then about their defeat to Rubin Kazan?
Well, what they're trying to say is, don't worry, it's all under control and Pep's got this sorted. And I suppose if there is a coach that deserves the benefit of the doubt, it is Pep Guardiola after what happened last season, particularly after what happened last season following a really bad start to the season when of course, they lost the opening game to Numancia and then didn't manage to beat Racing Santander in week two and went on to win the treble. But I think that's partly wishful thinking. I think there is a recognition that there's a broad problem at Barcelona, which is one that, you know, I was talking about at the very start of the season, which is that their squad is short. If they get a couple of injuries, they can't really withstand that as they might have been able to last year. And also last year, they didn't get those injuries. Xavi and Iniesta look very tired. Dani Alves, who seemed to be indestructible, is now out for 3 or 4 weeks, which is a big difference. And there's one or two people saying, hang on a minute, is the absence of Samaletu more important than we originally thought? But then the other way of looking at it is that they I think had 13 shots on target compared to two against, and two against went in, and only one of theirs didn't, and they totally dominated possession again. But it is true that Barcelona look a tiny little bit sluggish, they look a little bit slow, and they've got a little bit less edge.
All right, Sid. Martin Rowley says hello. He says, I live in Madrid. I used to run a team with Sid Lowe. One of the teams we played against was sixth form students from the school I work at. I'm not sure if Sid is aware that Alvaro Dominguez, who played for Atletico last night against Chelsea, would have played against Sid in these games, as he is an ex-student. Big loss that for Atletico.
Yeah, I had that kid in my pocket every time we played him.
Impressive.
Yeah, I was actually aware that Alvaro Dominguez had been at the school.
Right.
I must confess, I didn't realise I'd played against him.
Well, there you go. They've got a goal difference of 6 conceded, none scored, Atletico so far in the Champions League.
So that's what Martin's not pointing out there is that Martin's a PE teacher, so it's his fault that Atletico Madrid are rubbish at the back.
All right, well, there you go. And to round things off on the Spanish point of view, Sevilla, a big win for them against Stuttgart. It was in Stuttgart, wasn't it, that win? Sorry?
Yep. Yeah, yeah. Sevilla, Spain's standard bearers. All three Spanish clubs lost, except for Sevilla, who are playing very, very well indeed. Look big and strong. They're very aggressive. They're very direct. And everyone's really quite pleased with them.
Excellent, Sid. Something big in the league for us to enjoy this weekend, is there?
Well, for us to enjoy, yeah. I'm not sure that the rest of Spain is particularly excited about this. I think we should be. This weekend, FC Barcelona at the Camp Nou against the only Englishman, apart from David Beckham, currently playing abroad, Ralph Adegotha and Jermaine Pennant's side. It's been a good start to the season for Pennant. And interestingly as well, there will be, a little bit of self-hyperbole. There will be an interview with Pennant in The Guardian in the next couple of days in which he's not entirely enamoured with the way that a certain Rafa Benitez slightly clipped his wings at Liverpool.
Yeah, right, okay. bit of novelty, someone criticising Benitez. Excellent. Thank you. Thank you very much, Sid. And we look forward to your report on all of that and more in Monday's Football Weekly.
Fantastic. Switch it in.
Thank you, Sid. That's it for part one, and a lengthy part one it was, but my word, what momentous events we were mulling over. More of the same to come in part two as we discuss the fallout from Liverpool and Lyon and all sorts of other things like that.
Football Weekly Extra on Guardian.co.uk.
Guardian.co.uk/football is your go-to destination for all the latest news and comment about the game. Now, Liverpool face Lyon on Tuesday night, and with disastrous consequences. We all know the result. What went wrong? Barry Glendening.
I don't know if anything particularly went wrong. It wasn't a particularly surprising result. Liverpool looked very, very poor, and I thought Lyon made quite heavy weather of beating them, to be honest. And that may sound like nitpicking, but they probably should have won it a lot more comfortably.
Pjanic, who's somebody I'd kind of been bigging up beforehand, a 19-year-old Bosnian, don't think he had a great game. But my favourite moment of the week was that pass outside to Govu to cross for the second goal. Going at pace, he's hitting it with his left foot, he's playing it across his body. And just it looked like he held off too long, but timed it perfectly, weighted it perfectly. And you saw in that moment just the real class he has. I mean, it's just a fantastic pass.
Paul, how seriously should we be taking Lyon and these French teams? Because all three of them won this week.
They did, yeah. I think I said a few weeks ago that Lyon and Bordeaux will be a force to be reckoned with in the Champions League this year, and that's certainly true. I don't think Marseille will. They're still too rickety at the back. Lyon, what was it? I think I also mentioned a few weeks ago that one of the things that was preventing Lyon from getting real widespread popularity in France was the fact that they'd never won at the home of one of the really big teams in Europe. And they did that, of course, at Anfield. But there was almost disappointment in the French media at they didn't have to play particularly well to do it. You know, Emmanuel Petit, actually, in L'Equipe yesterday, was saying that, no disrespect to Lyon, but any team in the world could have beaten that Liverpool side. And it is quite damning on Rafa just how moderate Liverpool looked when they're missing, obviously, some key players. And even in the positive performances in the early part of the season from Liverpool, you could see reasons to criticise Benitez, bizarrely, because Martin Kelly, right back, played really well on his debut the other day, which made you wonder, well, if they had this guy in reserve, why blow most of your budget on Glenn Johnson in the summer and leave yourself with just one centre forward whose absences last season arguably cost it the title. Similarly, another young player, I think he's particularly bad at developing young players, but there are a couple of exceptions, and Emiliano Nzua has been really good recently, so why spend $7 million last year on De Sena? It's bizarre. And then, of course, there's the other problems. He was booed, which I was pleased to see Liverpool fans booing. Actually, they should do it more often. When he withdrew Benayoun, who he can never really trust, because Benayoun is somebody who is spontaneous and inventive and plays off the cuff and gives Liverpool that unpredictability that unsettles other teams, but also unsettles control freaks like Benitez, in much the same way that Huye could never really trust in Yari Littman. And even he knew he was a good player, but because he didn't know exactly what he was going to do, he wouldn't play him regularly. Now, lately, this season, Benitez has played Benayoun a lot more than he has in the past, but still, he's the first man he pulls off when he needs to change something. To bring on Voronin, who's just another of these players who are in Liverpool's squad, who you don't really know what their purpose is. He's not a young player who's going to get better. And he's got Voronin, Degen, who even Damien Plessis, who's been there for 2 years, and maybe a good young player, but if he was at Arsenal, he'd have seen a lot more action, for example. But why are you looking at me and laughing? This happens every time I speak.
I know.
Right, no, it wasn't. I was just thinking you might like to inhale now. I was actually asking about Lyon, but brilliantly argued.
Lyon, in fairness, I mean, Liverpool fans can moan that, obviously, they were without Torres, Gerrard, and Johnson, who you could argue are their three best players. Lyon had no central defenders after Chris went off, and they were playing with Toulalon and a 20-year-old substitute Gonalon, who's a midfielder, at the central of the defence, which is a bit like if Liverpool had to play with, say, Mascherano and Spearing in the centre of their defence.
And yet,
Liverpool caused no problem to them at all, to that patched-up defence.
Well, there you go. Liverpool with all sorts of problems. You mentioned the fact that Torres and Gerrard and Johnson are out. What's the forecast for this weekend and the visit of Man United?
Well, it's Man United's streaky look is continuing, isn't it? I mean, every time they face an opponent, they're without key players.
Yeah. And, all right.
But Gerrard should be fit, shouldn't he? I mean, he was taken off precautionary with a groin niggle. So I think the implication of that is he should be all right.
Johnson said yesterday that he should be fit for Sunday.
Right, OK. There's a lot of talk about Liverpool potentially losing 8 in a row. They've lost 4 in a row already. Next 4 games for them are United on Sunday, Arsenal away in the Carling Cup, Fulham away, and then Lyon away. So it's not beyond the realms of possibility.
It's a damning indictment on Birmingham City that nobody's saying there's a quite big possibility that they might lose 9 in a row.
Yeah, indeed. So now, Liverpool did do the double over United last season. So, hey, you know, this could be the perfect chance for them to bounce back like a big red beach ball.
I mean, Liverpool have got out of a worse pickle than this in the Champions League before. I think it was 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. They had to win their last 3 games and in the group stages and did. So
there's a reason why Liverpool are at their best when they have to play catch-up. It's because they have to throw caution to the wind, and the players have to use a bit of inspiration and initiative rather than just do exactly what Benitez says.
Yeah, there you go. In the meantime, a Man United looking good, a win in Moscow that thrilled you yesterday, Barry.
Yeah, it wasn't a very good game. I think the only noteworthy things that happened in the 90 minutes, I noticed that there were 3 twins on the field.
Oh.
The two...
triplets, then.
Well, no, you see, that's
three pairs of twins.
Yeah.
No, one pair of twins, the...
Berezitskis. Who are terrible. How they still get a game. The most lumbering, slow, ludicrous players. Go on.
And Fabio da Silva was playing. So I was just wondering if that was the first time.
Right, I see what you're saying. There were some tweets about this game that Shawnee passed over to us. Thanks, Sean Ingle, for that. And thank you, Richard Dunn and Barry Landy. Oh, sorry, no, Jay Jenvis for tweeting about Nani. If he had a brain, would he be dangerous to the opposition, says Jay Jenvis. Richard Dunn thinks that Nani is stepping up to the mark for United, as uncool as that may be to admit. Is that true?
I think the first poster you read out there has a point. If he had a brain, he'd be dangerous. He's good on the ball, and he can beat players, and he got in a position to deliver lots of crosses yesterday, but his delivery is very poor, and it's... as if he doesn't look where he's passed the ball. There was one situation I remember in particular. He had, you know, got himself into a position to cross. The Man U players queuing up to get the ball in the box, and he delivered it to the one place in the penalty area where there were no players from either side.
Right.
It's interesting how many of that type of wingers there are around at the moment. And the only one I think who is visibly and consistently improved, a manager who's improved a player, is Harry Redknapp. Aaron Lennon has become a really fine player under him, whereas the likes of Ryan Babel, Nani, and even Walcott are still inconsistent.
Right. James Milner, I think, has been doing very well.
Good point.
Andy Reid.
I mean, what do you do? Do you go on the training ground and put them in a neck brace, and, you know, so they have to look up? Or I just don't know.
It's a good idea, that one. Now, quick question for Jonathan from Barry Landy: is Akinfeev? Is he good enough to be Manchester United's first choice? And will United buy him? Is there some transfer rumor visibly?
Yeah, United were very strongly linked with him when I was out in Moscow. I mean, the Moscow papers were talking about that a lot. There was a brief rumour that went around, appeared to have no substance, in fact, that CSKA had said, yes, you can talk to him in January. That seems to have been slightly erroneous. He is a very good keeper. He's still very young. He's 23. I think he was better 18 months ago. He had a serious knee injury. I'm not sure he's quite back to his best after that. I think he was possibly slightly culpable on the goal on last night. I just hope that wherever he goes, he does get a game. I think people like Lukas Fabianski have really suffered from the promising young keepers. Then they come to England and they never play. And I think keepers almost beyond any other position need to get games.
Right. Okay. Now, other English teams. Arsenal only got a draw away to AZ Alkmaar. Rangers, so a British, another British outfit. Oh dear. Lee said about that probably the better. Rangers fans.
I think this is one occasion where Rangers fans won't be complaining about the lack of coverage the team gets on Football Week.
Two own goals and a missed penalty, was it?
Yeah. Sounds right. So let's just finish off part two by asking Liverpool Man United. Right, Emmanuel Petit says anybody can beat Liverpool. Presumably, that's even a Man United team that's still only just clinging on to their top four status, Paul Law.
Yeah, they're not playing well, and it's a sad reflection on the Premier League that they're top at the moment. But they have had a lot of luck. But Liverpool, they do, you know, as I said earlier, they do have this rage against the dying of the light spirit, which may inspire them.
I don't know if this was Freud who said this, but one of the psychoanalysts that there's the Apollonian and Dionysian present in us all. And Rafa is the Apollonian, this controlling, everything has to be done to plan. And then you have the Dionysian, who are people like Gerard and Ben Ayoun, who are desperately pulling away from the plan. And all clubs have an element of that. But in Liverpool, the conflict is so strong, it seems to be kind of pulling them down at the moment.
You nicked that out of the sun this morning. I saw that.
Yeah, I did. Okay.
There you go. That's part two. Now, still more Football Weekly Extra excitement to come when we touch on the business up at Borough and one or two other Champions League results and other stuff too. That's all in part three. Part three. Middlesbrough have sacked Southgate. Interesting bit of timing. I mean, they weathered all the relegation.
That is exactly why I was saying it was good to see Liverpool fans booing, and why a couple of years ago I wrote a thing cascading Liverpool fans for singing "You'll Never Walk Alone" as a show of great loyalty during a miserable defeat. Southgate was sacked because the fans used their power in an intelligent way. They didn't turn up, and so they forced the hand of Chairman Steve Gibson. That's how you effect a change, not by singing a song of loyalty.
Crowds are down on average by 10,000 on last season. Of course, they have been relegated, so that'll have an impact on that. But they are just 1 point off the top of the Championship. Still, Southgate giving his marching orders. And Wee Gordon Strachan apparently lined up to take over. That's certainly going to win over the home supporters.
Are you being sarcastic?
No, it might do. Am I?
I mean, I think a change is overdue. It does look a bit odd on the face of it that they're only a point off the pace, and he was sacked in the media aftermath of a victory and was quite clearly stunned to be sacked because he didn't see it coming. But, he hasn't been getting brilliant results. They got absolutely tonked by West Brom, and change
5-0, wasn't it?
I find it baffling, I have to say. I think if you're going to make the time to make the change was last February when, I remember being on the pod and there being a lot of talk about why Tony Adams and Gareth Southgate should keep their jobs on the grounds that they're young English managers and therefore we should kind of let them off. And the point I made then was if you want them not to get relegated, you've got to sack them. And Portsmouth did sack Tony Adams and they stayed up, and Middlesbrough didn't sack Southgate and they went down. But having showed that faith in him, I don't really see what you gain by sacking him now. I mean, unless they really think Strachan is significantly better as a manager and they've already got him lined up, which I'm guessing is what has happened.
Right.
I just think there's this kind of, there's a culture now, not just in football, but generally. I'm going to sound like Ferguson on his rant about reality TV shows here. But people aren't allowed to make a mistake anymore. But
the thing about Southgate was he was allowed to make too many mistakes, surely.
Things start to go wrong and immediately, it's a crisis.
Yeah.
Well, it's a manager who possibly has got something wrong. Give him a chance to learn from that. Give him a chance to put it right.
But they did. Borough did.
Well, I'm not sure they did. I mean,
they were legendary for sticking by him in the face of defeat after defeat after appalling performance.
I think they should have stuck with him longer because he hasn't really had a chance to work out the Championship. He's only been in the Championship for 2 months.
Well, I'm going to back off now because I'm arguing with Jonathan Wilson. That can only mean trouble for one person. There you go. Grimsby. Barry, is it true that they're thinking of signing Hope Powell as their manager?
Well, that was the rumour going around.
That would be fantastic, wouldn't it?
Yesterday.
I mean, the chairman was asked, would he consider appointing Hope Powell? So he couldn't say, no way, I'd never appoint a woman.
Oh, right.
So he said, yeah. Hope Powell. And she has an excellent record.
Mm-hmm.
So be just a question of how would male players take to being managed by her? I don't know the answer. I don't know that particular group of players.
Right.
The chairman has said that she hasn't applied for the job, so therefore she won't be considered, obviously. But, right. So Grimsby will remain hopeless.
There's no reason why it shouldn't work. We had Thatcher running the country, Mrs. Baz running the
And look
the
what
Baz
a great
house,
job she did.
Yeah.
What happened to the team that Sherry Lungi managed in the manageress? Did they do well?
No, I think they're down the Blue Square Northern Vision now, I think. Well, I was just thinking, like, if she did get the job, it would bring a huge amount of publicity to Grimsby. Yeah. It would put bums on seats because people would come to see how they're getting along. Snigger, yes. But, yeah, why not? And the fact that she would be taken over from noted misogynist Mike Newell would make it extra, even more interesting. Mm. Personally, I reckon a squad of Grimsby footballers probably wouldn't like to be told what to do by a woman, but I could be doing them a grave injustice.
Well, especially since you get told what to do by a woman when it comes to watching your Champions League. Nice, Chris. Just read the article.
Sorry, James, could I just interrupt you there? You're not going to watch Roma play at Craven Cottage tonight. Could you tell us why?
It's my wife's birthday.
Yes.
Happy birthday, Mrs. Jimbo.
So you're going shopping instead?
I might be.
Yeah. For clothes. For
right.
her.
Yeah.
So don't have a go at me for being pussy whipped.
Oh dear. Nice Chris, sorry, I wanted to mention Nice Chris's post. Just read the article linked on this page about The Guardian being banned from Elland Road because of David Conn's top reporting of the ownership issues there. Any chance the pod could comment on this on Thursday? Can we?
I'm commenting on Ken Bates. He's a disgraceful man, I think, in almost every respect. And the third piece I ever wrote in journalism back in 1998 or 9 was Dennis Wise had agreed to do an interview with me, and then he pulled out for some spurious reason. I wrote a piece kind of saying, well, I didn't realise this happened every week. I didn't know that all footballers do this all the time. So I wrote this angry piece about Dennis Wise. And Ken Bates used his column in The People to slag me off.
No.
And yeah, my third piece in journalism, I thought.
So he used his column to slag off somebody who displeased him.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he hasn't moved on.
Right. No, I was just thinking about what you'd done to incur his wrath. It was basically the same thing, no? Wasn't that just... Are you not being hypocritical here, Jonathan Wilson? Anyway, listen. Surely the Football League should take action here, says Nurse Chris, because you can't have clubs just saying willy-nilly, oh, they've written something we don't like, we're going to ban them from reporting on our club.
I suppose they can if they want.
I
presume there's nothing to stop The Guardian or any other newspaper buying a ticket and report, going and reporting in the match. Personally,
what they should be taking action about is, or at least exploring quite vigorously, is the reasons for the ban. The reasons for the ban is because David Conn is trying to get to the bottom of the ownership of Leeds and who precisely owns them. It's all a bit nebulous, and the league haven't been able to see whether the owner passes the fit and proper persons test because they're not altogether sure who the owner is.
Mm.
So that's
and what are they doing about that now? Because they had a big meeting a couple of weeks back.
You'll have to ask David Conn. Is that the most inappropriate named journalist in British football, given what he does?
I have to say, press strikes or press blackouts, or press strikes is the translation, are a perennial feature of Italian football life and made the old Gazzetta days very interesting. Now, also in the posts, a few weeks ago, the pod, Barney, I think, no, it was Barry, discussed the possibility of footballers being skint, says Smash Hit. Today, John Barnes was said to be bankrupt. Spooky.
Well, it is spooky. I was astonished to see that because he was once one of the highest paid players in the world. I think he missed the gravy train, like the super duper gravy train, but... he insists that it's just sort of an oversight with.
Well, he's presumably just been paid off by Tranmere, hasn't he? Who's he?
Yeah,
Tranmere. Yeah.
I don't know how much he got from them, but
not bad,
he insists it's just an oversight that he didn't file his tax or something to do with tax. So maybe he's not skint. I don't know.
All right then, M. Meiser.
Well, actually, I think there's a surprising number of footballers are skint because. Mm. Even in the modern age, because they spend money ridiculously. But if you go back to the John Barnes generation. What would they have been on? £2,000 a week, maybe £3,000 a week maximum, which once you take off tax, you think of their kind of even then quite extravagant lifestyles. It's it's not a huge amount for people who pretty much don't work after the age of 32, 33. So I think probably more footballers than we realise are
skint.
So, I mean, from our own idiocy in many cases, are skint.
Well, it's a tough call, isn't it, when you come into wealth so early on and there's a lot of peer pressure for you to live the lifestyle a lot. I feel for them.
Yeah.
All too keenly.
I mean, we had a thing on our classic YouTube feature recently. It was El Hadj Diouf avoiding and getting a parking ticket. And he was driving this absolute, what looked like a gold-plated
aircraft.
I don't know if a Range Rover and a Hummer had sex, this would be the outcome. It wasn't quite a Hummer, but it was bigger than a Range Rover.
Yeah.
And looked to be gold-plated.
It was an astonishing vehicle.
Yeah, and you wonder, how much does that cost? How much does it cost to insure? How much does it cost to keep on the road? I wouldn't imagine it does too many miles to the gallon. And, you know, if that's the kind of rubbish he's spending his money on, and he's perfectly entitled to spend his money on whatever he wants, but you wouldn't imagine it's going to last too long.
Well, indeed not.
I quite like Juffy. I've got a soft spot for him. I mean, he's clearly a nutter in many ways, but I remember in 2006, African Cup of Nations, Senegal were training Ismailia, which was miles from anywhere, and we went all the way to see them, and as he's going on the training pitch, said, yeah, any chance for a word afterwards? Yeah, no problems. Comes up afterwards, and something's happened on the training pitch, and he's in the right mood, and he's like, oh, I don't want to talk. So I come on, we come all the way to see you. And so, yeah, with bad grace, he comes in the bar with me and a couple of other journalists, and he's being incredibly dull, and that's just, you know, he's not a dull man. So after 5 minutes, I was just sick of it. I said, look, Juffy, come on. Yeah, you're always great. Just say something silly. Just say something I can write down. And he went, oh, okay, the wrong African teams have qualified. It's going to be a disgrace. I'll be embarrassed to watch African teams at the World Cup. Thank you. Okay, you can go now.
Now I know why Dennis Wise didn't turn up.
Do you think that's how the Everton banana story got started? Somebody asked him to say something stupid.
May well have been, yeah.
JB88, question for James. What do you think is the big problem with Inter in the Champions League? Because here's something we haven't talked about in Ruben Kazan and Barcelona's group there. Inter hosted Dynamo Kiev and emerged with a 2-2 draw. Now, that's 8 games in a row in Europe that they haven't won a match, Inter. Which, when you think of all the money that Mourinho spent and his big rep and all that, is pretty dismal. JB88 mentions the appalling crowd, or the appallingly small crowd at the San Siro. I think there were only 20,000 there, and there were a lot of banners up about the fact that the ticket prices are too high. Incidentally, those ticket prices are €35. So it's not that high, but then they're not very happy about that. And there was, I think, one sign suggesting that the low attendance was a kind of conscious act of rebellion against these high ticket prices. But JB also, 88, also asked how Jose's stock is with the fans. There are now signs of unrest, and it's a crucial match for them, the next one, which is away to Dynamo Kiev, because they're currently bottom of the group, Inter. There's only one point between the four teams, but they are the bottom side. And they really have to win that, and if they don't, then I think that the tide might start a-turning. And let's now move on then, finally, to just have a look forward to one or two other little Premier League match-ups. You got a London derby, West Ham against Arsenal. Ooh, West Ham are in a bit of trouble, aren't they? Haven't won since the opening day of the season now. And do you think they're likely to turn that around against Arsenal?
No.
No? Oh, OK. The exodus of players has caught up with them. Is that the reason for this, or is there some other factor?
No, I think that's probably the main reason. They've had
bad injuries as well.
Right, I mean, they always do, don't they, West Ham?
Yeah, they do for some reason.
Birmingham, meanwhile, are taking on your chaps, Sunderland. Lee Catamol, who we were just raving about after his performance against Liverpool, now out until after Christmas with knee ligament damage.
Yeah, it's terrible. But I mean, thank goodness we brought in Zenden. At least we got a bit of cover there. No,
listeners, if only you could see Jonathan's face when he said that. Ah, dearie me.
And I suppose Kieran Richardson, who missed the game on Saturday through suspension, he'll be back, and right. he could play in a central role, so it's a blow, but it's not as disastrous as it might have been.
Mm. Hull are taking on Pompey. How big a game is this down at the bottom of the table?
Massive, defining. Yeah, it's a huge game. They both need to win. Portsmouth particularly need to win. I think Portsmouth will win.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all.
Jimmy Bullard played 60 minutes for the reserves midweek.
I think just generally Portsmouth
have Fulham on Monday as well.
I think it's generally Portsmouth have played better than results have suggested this season. Yeah.
But you think they're going to go to the KC Stadium and get the 3 points?
Well, Hull are atrocious at the back. Or certainly the World Game in Sunderland, which is the only time I've actually seen them this season.
Right. Nothing going forward.
Okay. Burnley, meantime, are taking on Wigan. And Wigan have not picked up an away point since the opening day of the season. Burnley, on the other hand, are 100% at home. Yes, they are, yeah. James.
Good. Well, good going forward, a bit fragile at the back, but at home.
Mm. There you go, because otherwise we'll be barraged by Burnley fans saying, why didn't you mention the Wigan game? Happens every week. There you go, that's it for Football Weekly Extra, etc. And we will be back on Monday. Many thanks to producer Pete, to Paul Doyle, Jonathan Wilson and Barry Glendenning. I'll be doing a paper review on what the European press made of this midweek's Champions League fixtures later on the Guardian site, guardian.co.uk/football. So maybe you'll join me for that. If not, see you on Monday. Bye for now.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.